Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. In this, the second of a two-part special on medicinal cannabis, Dr. John Lawson, a paediatric neurologist at the Sydney Children's Hospital, talks about cannabidiol and its possible role in the treatment of paediatric epilepsy. He is the co-author of a narrative review on that subject, published in the MJA on the 19th of February 2018. Dr. Lawson is my special guest today. Kids with epilepsy, are there, presumably there are already a bunch of perfectly good drugs used to treat paediatric epilepsy, is that right?
Yeah, look, a real boom since the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And probably, so we've gone, you know, over a 20-year period, we've got about a choice of about around 24 different drugs that have been proven to work in epilepsy.
Okay.
And but despite that, there still remains a very core group of children, perhaps one in five, who have very treatment-resistant epilepsy.
Treatment-resistant meaning what's the official definition? Is it two drugs, three drugs that have to be tried?
Or? Yeah, there's a few definitions, but broadly, it failing more than two appropriate anticonvulsants, continue to seize despite the adequate trials of two anticonvulsants, I think is the latest official definition.
So did medicinal cannabis come up as an option because doctors were casting around and researchers were casting around for an answer, or was it a parent-driven kind of the media hype around cannabis?
Yep.
Was that what drove it?
Yeah, so very unusual. So I think it's certainly beyond my experience, but this really is, you could term it consumer-driven, but there probably are bigger forces than that, including agriculture and the marijuana, the broader marijuana legalization lobby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very complex series of sort of social forces that probably makes it difficult because makes the discussion difficult because it entangles different types of cannabis, mixes up adults with children, palliative care issues,
mm-hmm,
with childhood epilepsy, which are really enormously different. And so it does, I think it's a confusing, it becomes a very confusing message and a difficult debate because of that. But truly, in terms of our use in Australia, there's no question this is consumer-driven medicine, which is, a new one. It's probably not the only example of it, but
yes.
Maybe HIV medicines, a bit like that too. Some of the early anti-HIV medications may well have had a big consumer-driven component, but this is really grassroots type stuff.
Cannabis is a pretty complicated stuff, isn't it?
Many different types of plant, and there's something like 600 cannabinoids, and then there's the terpenes, which is some other planty thing,
mm-hmm,
that are and potentially that, and that leads to some of the unproven theories, which are the what's called the entourage effect.
Yes.
Meaning it's this natural holistic whole plant required to give somebody benefit, which again is sort of the opposite of scientific medicine, where one's looking for, the components of, the plant contains a whole bunch of things. And so, like digoxin, the foxglove, you find the chemical that is actually making the difference. So that's another sort of unusual thing.
So which part of cannabis is under study for paediatric epilepsy?
Most research has been in THC, which is the most common component of your standard cannabis plant,
mm-hmm,
one of the psychoactive components, and the cannabidiol is also a fairly common component of your standard cannabis that you can buy, that you could buy for recreational purposes.
Yeah.
So that's cannabidiol or CBD, and cannabidiol is in greater quantities in industrial hemp type products. That's why a whole bunch of the alternative market is derived from industrial hemp.
Yep.
CBD and THC have both been heavily studied in a number of diseases and in preclinical animal models. And CBD has, and really all of the standard epilepsy animal models has shown to be an anticonvulsant. You know, large numbers of studies have been done on the general lack of toxicity. You know, in before we talk about humans, years of research into its safety in terms of multiple animal species and, you know, teratogenicity and carcinogenicity, all those sorts of things, showing that it's, you know, that it should be safe for human use, as well as the fact it's been used in humans for a long time.
Isn't it a bit of a paradox that CBD sort of helps to calm down seizures? Isn't the mechanism, doesn't it hyperexcite some part of the neurological makeup of...
Yeah, look, I think, so no, nobody understands, there are several targets of CBD in the brain, and they're not fully understood. And look, that's also, you could ask me about any anticonvulsant, and I would say that nobody knows exactly how that anticonvulsant works. I could tell you, like for Dilantin, that it works on sodium channels and things, but so no one really understands why it works. But I suppose broadly, CBD's not really been in, it's not been used by itself, although cannabis has been used for thousands of years. CBD has never been used in an isolated sense. So there are, again, theories about it being sort of calming, you know, sort of an antidote to the sort of activating, anxiety-provoking THC. But I think a lot of that's still... actually, you know, still speculative, really.
How important is it for these drug-resistant kids to get a treatment? Are they more severely affected, or are the long-term effects going to be worse for them because they're not getting treatment?
Well, epilepsy, anybody who has epilepsy, it really is a very serious disease. Mm. And when it's, even the mildest forms, have enormous impacts on people really throughout their life. And so when it gets compared to other chronic diseases, it's worse than almost all of them, really, in terms of impacts on you know, ability to get a job and rates of depression and you know, all the you know, lower rates of being married and, mm-hmm. and sort of across the ages, you know, sort of a 5 to 10 times risk of dying every year epilepsy compared to, you know, someone your age otherwise. And you know, the impact is just so much more than those individual seizures. And internationally, of course, it's got a terrible, just that historical concept of epilepsy with, you know, that it's a punishment from God, or, you know, it's a possession by a demon, that sort of thing. And that's still very apparent in a huge number of the world population. That, you know, and you still see those attitudes even in developed nations as well, that it's a you know, punishment or a, you know, possession. For children, it's, you know, not only life-destroying for them, but their families as well. Yeah. And that applies to adults as well. But, you know, families, you know, don't sleep at night, and that, you know, and their child's wondering whether their child's going to die or end up in the hospital the next day. And the other sort of, the other little difference about epilepsy is very unpredictable. So if you've got bad asthma or something, you'll know, oh, I've got a cold, you know, my child's got a cold.
Yes.
They're likely to get into trouble over the next few days, or, you know, it's spring, so I expect that sort of trouble. And whereas epilepsy, you can be perfectly fine, and then 2 seconds later you can be on the floor, smashed, you know, cracked your head and going blue. And I suppose that's the image of epilepsy is also very ugly as well. It's an awful thing to see. And even, you know, I see seizures most days, videos or, you know, investigations that we do, and there's still, even someone who's seen loads, is still a horrible thing to see.
Up until May of last year, the evidence for the use of CBD with paediatric epilepsy was pretty slight, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. So... At best, mainly small case reports and very poorly designed studies and often really quite old studies as well. That's right. Until the publication in May of that first randomised control trial in Dravet syndrome, and in fact only a week ago, the second paper was published as well, which is in Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. So that was published in The Lancet about February the 2nd, those two papers are the best publications and double-blind randomised control trials that are for the first time showing definitive evidence of the at least short-term safety and efficacy of CBD, of cannabidiol.
Those are two pretty specific types of epilepsy. Are the results generalizable, do you think, to other forms?
Yeah. So both of those are famous for, you know, they're incredibly treatment-resistant conditions. And
yeah.
I suppose if you sort of compare the results with the cannabidiol versus, say, other trials, they're in the same sort of ballpark. A really important message, which is really lost to the public, is the in both those trials, more than half of the people, so the majority of the children, got no significant benefit, and so that's a very different. That's a very strong message, which I use in the clinic as well for people who are desperate. When I say to them, look, you know, this, although it's sold as a miracle, most people aren't helped by it in those groups anyway, and in those very severe epilepsies. But that is comparable to other medicines.
Right.
And the other key thing that came out of that trial, out of those trials, is that it's not safe. Again, the hype would say that this is, completely never harmed anyone and, never harmed anybody sort of thing. And these are small numbers. They're both trials, less than 100 children, but they had significant withdrawal rates of children who couldn't tolerate the drug. So,
what are the adverse effects?
Yeah, most common adverse events are hypersomnolence, so being excessively sleepy, and gastrointestinal, so meaning sort of the opposite of what you'd think. So they tend to go off their food. Appetite decreases rather than increases.
Wow.
And so you get weight loss and they can get diarrhea. Diarrhea might be related to, it's in a sesame oil base, so it's possible that, the vehicle of the drug is contributing to that, but that's not certain. So far, the most severe, and so they're all very reversible. They're not particularly nasty side effects, but they are enough to stop the drug. And there's been around the 5% mark rate of significant liver function abnormalities, so elevated transaminases. And that's a recognised, I didn't know this, but it's a recognised problem with plant-based medicines. It's something to do with the way the liver, if you have a plant-based medicine, liver function abnormalities are common, supposedly. So that's an important one. And the other probably really important thing is that there are a lot of interactions. So the drug is metabolized and interacts with a number of metabolism pathways in the liver, and so it means that a number of the children can present with toxicity related to the other drugs. So the hypersomnolence probably is mainly an interaction with other drugs, so pushing those levels up or down. And that is the scary. It's one of the reasons we wrote the article, but it's one of the scary things about what's happening around the world, where governments are essentially absolving themselves of responsibility, and not and the calls for this to be treated like a food substance when it absolutely is a drug. It's a drug. It's a drug. It's a drug.
Yes.
Why are we even arguing that marijuana could be a food, marijuana is a food substance and not a drug. It's just bizarre even to start at that point, but all of the evidence says that this is a drug, and it should be regulated like a drug for those purely for safety reasons, and particularly when we're talking about children. Safety is less of an still an issue for people, say, for palliative care. It's still important they don't harm people, but when we're talking about long-term effects for children, it's shocking.
So what's your take on the way the TGA have gone about things so far?
The government and through the TGA, I think, has been extremely responsible. And they can criticise them for speed and all those sorts of things, but they have really, to this point anyway, have strongly followed that path of saying that this should be treated as a medicine. And that is not what's happening in all those states in the US and in Canada and Germany and, you know, Israel. You know, it really, so they are standing up against a bit of a tide just to make it legalized and just be treated like a food. Incredibly supportive of that.
Yeah. It's complicated, isn't it, for a practitioner to prescribe CBD for pediatric epilepsy. It sounds like it needs to be, though.
Once you know how to do it, it's quite easy, and it's actually really quick. It's actually really, so once the TGA knows that you're an appropriate prescriber, meaning then the approval process, if you came and brought your child to me and I wanted to prescribe cannabidiol, I could get an approval within a few hours from the TGA.
Right.
Yeah. So and you could have drug in your hand within a few days. So for some it's very easy, and because I'm a recognised epilepsy specialist, but if you look at a GP, then they can do it, but they've got to prove that they're an expert, and so that they can't. do that.
Yes.
In the field of childhood epilepsy, for instance, they can't. They won't be able to. There's no one. I'm not aware of any GPs who are experts in childhood epilepsy.
Yeah.
But they could. I could write a letter saying, for I know this patient X, and I support the use for Dr. Smith to apply for this drug. And so a GP can do it, would need a supporting letter from me saying I agree, you know, that this is appropriate. And so that could happen. And there is a couple of paediatricians, so specialist paediatricians, who have done that. But there are reasons. When you've got a brand new substance, there are reasons for those controls to be put in place until more widespread understanding of the disease and the treatment comes out.
Under what circumstances do you prescribe it? Is it more than just being drug resistant to two or three drugs? Do you need to have a more narrow base for deciding that you'll prescribe CBD?
Yes. Look, I'd like to. So I suppose my broad principles would be definitely drug resistant epilepsy. So I have to meet that definition, but that I would definitely more than that definition. So if someone had failed two drugs, I wouldn't consider that sufficient alone. I'd want them to have failed, you know, of the order of, you know, like five or something like that, because the chances of another medicine working would be, any medicine working is very low in that situation. Wouldn't be my next choice, truly. So it would be the patient would be requesting it. That's a key part of it.
Yes.
So I generally look. I have come around to bring it up in conversation because I know that everyone knows about it. So they know that I'm. Aside from all that, the biggest issue is cost, and so you really see nothing on that at all, apart from the occasional Facebook page. But that is the main, you know, they talk about doctors not prescribing. The biggest reason doctors not prescribing is that the patients can't afford it. And for a small child, you know, 20 kilo child, it'll cost them essentially, you know, more than $1,000 every couple of weeks to give a decent dose of one of the TGA approved products. So the only people I have prescribed for, which is terrible, is people who've got an absolute bucket of money, or I sort of form a contract with them and say, look, this is going to cost you $3,000, but, you know, we will know, you know, all the trials say that you know very quickly whether it's working or not.
Yeah.
So you'll know within 3 or 4 weeks that it's working or not. And if it's not working, you just stop. And so I've had some families who are more modest incomes who have decided that that's what they want to do. And and then if it's been, you know, the other side of that is if it was very successful, then I would try and apply to the drug committee and hospital drug committee and try and get it, but no one's been that successful yet. Yeah.
We're in this very odd limbo with this product. The evidence is just not there yet,
really,
is
it? Not at all. And I think overall, apart from that it doesn't have it in these severe patients, it doesn't, most of them, it doesn't help.
Mm.
In the ones that it does help, it's still modest. You know, for the majority of them, it's a modest benefit. It's not very rarely seizure-free. Even some of the poster children who are put up as fantastic, they're not seizure-free, they're still seizing. You know, where its actual role will be, you know, in the future, I think it'll be approved, and almost 100% sure it'll get approved by the FDA and TGA. You know, eventually by the TGA it'll get approved. But once the hype dies down, it might really, you know, it might be 15th choice. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be higher up the list. But when it's, we sort of, you know, in the less severe epilepsies, we, you know, maybe it is a very good drug for those. But just the way we learn about these medicines, you don't try it in people who you can control very easily on something else. Yeah.
So what needs to happen next?
Probably the next thing is definitely more research. We need to learn more, and then approval in overseas jurisdiction, you know, approval in the big markets, so FDA and European medicines. Mm-hmm. So when they approve, and that'll happen. We assume it will happen this year. When that happens, the company will turn towards the smaller markets and decide whether they can be bothered or not. Because
well, it comes down to that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Plenty of drugs we don't have because we're just too small. So that, you know, there might be. So hopefully, well, the TGA will approve, but if the other jurisdictions approve, then you'd expect the TGA likely to approve. But then the PBAC, then that's the next block. The PBAC be happy to fork out thousands of dollars a month for a drug that may be not so good.
Is this a drug you hang your hopes on, John, or have you got other bigger fish to fry, or other pokers in the fire, as it were?
No is the answer. I'm hopeful. I came in as quite a skeptic, so that attitude has changed. Meaning, I now believe
yes.
that it is an anti-epileptic, but I'm not sure what place it has. Look, you know, it is the early stages of development, meaning that there are other potential compounds that haven't been looked at. May well be a frontline drug for some indications, but looking at it plainly, I wouldn't look at it and go, that's a miracle drug, as opposed to any other. I really think, okay, this could have a place just like any other drug. You know, so I don't think it's special only because it's marijuana. That's the only thing special about it.
John, thanks so much for your time.
Okay.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.